Welcome back. This is Jeff Sachs from Mishkan Tzipora and Web Yeshiva. We are closing in on the end, on the finale of the third perek of Masechet Ta'anit. And then it's a very short, a little bit of the fourth chapter. And then we'll be done with Masechet Ta'anit. We'll have to make plans for moving forward. But before we begin, I'll here just digitally share my words of Tanchumim to you, Shalom Parnas, on the loss, B'seiva Tova, of your mom, but Seva Tova is only a Chatzi Nechama, I know. I was able to see you in person at the Shiva, but here in our collective virtual community, I'll add it also. Maybe just tell us a word about your mom's Alea Shalom.
What could I say? She was almost 96 years old. She lived in Israel for 51 years. And she's been a widow for 41 years, and she's managed to raise a whole tribe here of children and great-grandchildren, and she'll be missed. You know, it's sad, but, you know, what can you say? 96 years old, it's not a tragedy, but it's sad.
But she's the only mother you had.
That's true.
So anyway, we are... Imcha b'tzar and Hamakom Yenachem etchem b'toch Shav LeZion v'Yerushalayim.
So thank you very much.
Amen. Welcome back to this year. Here we are in the middle of Daf Kof Hei Omud Beis 25b. You see where we are in the arrow. Tanu Rabbanan. Ad Matai. Like, now that we've gone through all of these long agadot, we really did a tremendous. Very, very, very many weeks of Agadah. Now the Masechta, you know, in its last Chatzi Amud, or Chatzi Amud and a bit, is coming into back to focus on its central topic. Ad Matai Yug Shamim Yordim V'Hatzibur Poskin Mita'anitam. When they were in the midst of the fasts for rain, well, you know, if it drizzles, you know, like even here, where was it? Somewhere up north the other day, in the middle of August, in the middle of, I don't think we're exactly in the middle of an intense heat wave, but it's been pretty hot here in Israel. There was a flash rain something up in the, where was it? In the Bikat HaYarden or something? Like someplace where you do not expect rain in the middle of the summer. There was
It was in the Northern Galil, apparently.
Oh, it was in the Northern Galil. Yeah. So there was like a bit of rain, and, you know, it doesn't take that much rain to cause even, you know, a bit of a trickle of a flash flood of some sort. So you're fasting for rain. It has in the middle of a drought. You're fasting for rain. You're davening. You're fasting. You're doing all the things that the Gemara has prescribed. And there's a drizzle. So the drizzle itself does not solve all the problems, right? How much does it have to rain that you say, okay, we can call off the fast? So the Gemara says, Kimlo Berech Hamachrisha, like the full. It's a little difficult to translate, and the Mefarshim can't agree. I'll say up to the full knee of the plow. So now let's look at an old plow. This is, I mean, you've all seen such pictures. I doubt any of you have been doing a lot of plowing of late. Certainly not this year, it's Shemitah. But even beforehand, actually, Cecil, maybe. Cecil, what do you do, Cecil, down there in Keturah? You don't work in agriculture, personally, do you?
I used long time ago, I worked in the dates, but I haven't worked in agriculture for many, many years.
Yeah, but you've never handled a plow that looks like this.
Nah.
No. But, you know, but we've all been to Neot Kidumim or some other type of like educational farm, and we have a sense. So you see this metal part, this is the actual plow. Now, this is the metal part that gets into the dirt and creates the furrow in which you can then plant the date saplings or the the pea beans or whatever else it is that you're planting. So how much does it have to have rained in order for us to say that's enough, we can call off the fast? So the Gemara says up until the bend in the plow, what it calls the berech. There are different explanations in the Mefarshim what it means, the berech. Maybe the berech is not berech like knee, but it's like brecha, right? That when you've plowed enough that you can, there's like a space to create a pool or a puddle of water. But it's some kind of measurement of how easily or how deeply the plow goes in. As a matter of fact, among the Mefarshim is that it has to do with your own knee. The farmer's knee, like you have to dig it as deep as the farmer's knee, although that seems pretty machmir. But apparently it's like this spot around here where the metal part of the plow bends like a knee. You see, this part is the part that would get hitched up to the donkey or the horse or the cow, and it would pull along, and the plower stands here holding like a sled onto these two handles, and this part here goes into the ground creating the furrow. So the ground has to be wet enough. When the ground is completely dry and hard packed, the plow has a hard time getting in. But once the ground is wet enough that the blade of the plow goes into a certain point, that is when you can stop the fast. The Gemara goes on, Divrei Rebbe Meir, that's what Rebbe Meir's position is, about the depth of the plow. The Chachamim Omrim, Bechareva, in dry land, in dry soil, it's up to a tefach, right? That is up to one fist length. But in Avuda, in work land that has already been kind of worked over and plowed up, it's two tfachim. So what's one or two tfachim? It's the amount of rain that has to come to saturate either one or two tfachim of soil. That's how much it is that you can then stop your fasting. How long does that take? How much rain is that? I'm sure we can find something in the academic literature that will tell us quantity of rain that would be required, but since none of us are tasked with actually carrying out these halachot, I don't know exactly how much rain that is. But it sounds like a quantity of rain. It sounds like a quantity of rain. Enough rain that a tefach of the earth, of packed earth, becomes wet and saturated. It seems like it's a good solid rain. Yes, Yehudi.
Steinsaltz has a picture on page 112. I don't know if it's a picture or a drawing, but he doesn't have the handle of the Maharisha looking quite as straight up as you do. He has more like a curved handle, and he calls where the curve is, that's Roman numeral 2, not Roman numeral, Arabic numeral 2, is what he thinks is Berech HaMaharisha.
The upper part.
Yeah, you see where he has a number 2.
I just pulled it off the show. Let me see if I can show this on the screen. Right? So you're talking about, he means.
Yeah, that's it.
That's
curved. He has a number 2 right on top of what he's talking about.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can see it very clearly. It's the upper part, and here's the blade underneath. This is the part that would be attached to the animal, I guess. And it's like the upper part here. Okay. Maybe. It's something having to do with the place.
In some kind of a serious way. To go around saying it means brecha is, I think, push comes to shove type of interpretation.
Okay. Chachamim omrim b'chareva tefach b'veinonit tfachayim in a medium worked ground it's two tfachim, and in worked ground it's shloshat tfachim. I think I misread this a moment ago. Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Ein lecha tefach milimala, she'ein tahom yotze likrato shloshat tefachim. So how does this work? I'm not sure that this is agriculturally or meteorologically exact, but it's a little bit out of my field. When it rains from above, the waters from below, what do you call that? The waters below the water table? Is that the water table? Is that the correct term?
Yeah, but I think it sometimes in the Gemara it means subterranean waters, not just table waters.
Not table waters, but water table. The water table is if you dig down a certain depth, you're going to get to water. In different
right,
places,
that's the water
is different
table. But what I'm saying is every so often the word to home doesn't really mean that. It means more like the subterranean waters.
Right. In other
you
words,
have to be careful to distinguish between. In other words, like it's if example, we're going to soon get to the word sinor. And the issue was going to be, and they talk about Tahom out Tahom Kore Lekord Sinorecha. Maybe we should save this for when you get to that verse, Rabbi Sachs.
Okay. So when it rains from above, the waters from below rise up. It rains enough that one tefach of soil above gets saturated. So what happens is that the water from below starts rising up three tefachim. So the Gemara now has a question. Vahatanya tefachayim lo kashya kan ba'avuda v'kan b'she'enu avuda. So wait, a minute ago we said it was two tefachim, and now we say it's one tefach. So that has to do with how densely packed the earth was. If the earth is very densely packed, it's harder for the water to seep down. And if the earth is tilled and looser, so it's much more absorbent and it takes it in. Vahatanya tfachayav lokashikan omar Rabbi Eliezer keshe minaschin et hamayim b'chag, when they do the nisuach hamayim on Sukkot, when on the corners of the mizbeach, you know, there were these chutes or pipes. And part of the service in the temple in other words, the nisuchim were part of all of the service, but especially on Sukkot, when water would be used, which of course so much of the halachot of Sukkot have to do with the anticipation of the rainy season that's meant to come. So much of the interpretation of the meaning of lulav and etrog has to do with something, you know, connected to the seasons and the rain and the need for water. So when they would do the nisuach hamayim, pouring water down these shoots on the corners of the mizbeach on Sukkot, tahom omer lechavero, the waters and the depths say one to the other, abba meimecho, let your waters bubble up. Abba means like ba'abuot. But let the waters froth and bubble up. Kol shnei re'im ani shomea. I hear the voice of two beloved friends. Shnei emar tahom el tahom korea lakol tzinorecha. It's a pasuk in Tehillim that the tahom, the deep waters, call out to the other deep waters through the voice, the sounds of these channels, the channels that are flowing from above to below, that this is the idea that the rainwater that hits the ground and the lower water that's underneath the ground, the Mei Tahom, are calling to each other, almost like friends or almost like lovers, until they would meet in the middle, right? I said the rainwater, but here we're talking about the nisuchim, the libation waters that would go down the chutes to get to the waters below. So Yehudi, what did you want to add about that?
Well, I'm just trying to point out that I'm not so sure what we're talking about here is the water table. I think it might very well, but the Tahoma in the pasuk, it certainly means the subterranean waters that was that originally they were covering the entire earth. And then Hashem commanded them, Yikavu Hamayim, and they had to go back, but they didn't really go back. Just the Yabasha was now available, and the Tahoma is still there. It's just
let's take that biblical midrashic idea literally. So where are those waters today? I mean, some of the waters,
where are they,
some of the primordial waters are the oceans, but the water that's underneath the Yabasha, what is that water?
That's the water table. Once upon a time ocean, like for example, you go to Great Salt Lake, you're seeing what was once upon a time covered
But that water is not there. But the water that's the actual water that's underneath the continents, what do we call that water?
It depends what you mean. If you talk about what you're going to get to if you drill deep enough in a well, then that's a water table. But if you talk about what the Tanakh is talking about, Tanakh doesn't mean by Tahoma water table. The Tanakh means by a Tanakh believes that underneath the earth there are, first of all, the Tanakh believes the earth is flat. We got to get this whole thing straight. There are three basic things. There's the heavens above, the earth below, and below that is the Tahoma. Okay? And when they talk here about the two Tahomes meaning, they mean, the Tahoma meaning the Arkiya. That's at the horizon. Okay? It was this whole thing that we're getting here, going up to, Hanitzanim and Ruba Aras, is talking about the fact that the cosmic netherworld has in it, a Tahome. And sometimes the word Tahome is, in other words, it doesn't have to fit the way we understand the material world now, any more than we have to explain Harakia Asher Me'ala Shemayim versus Harakia.
So I was translating this midrashic idea into a contemporary scientific vocabulary. There is water underneath the dry land.
Right.
And well, depending on where you do that sometimes. There are places in town. I looked this all up. There are places in the Mishnah where it's a home has basically means just what you said, the water table. When it talks about manners of Tumah, that's what they're talking about. But there are other places in Talmud, certainly a bit with the Mayim. There's Nisach HaMayim, it goes down to the Tahom. This whole idea that the Mizbeach is basically right on top of the Tahom. You read that in Masechet Sukkah, and the Nisach HaMayim goes all the way out to the Tahom. They don't mean they're the water table. They mean the mythological Tahom from Maaseh Bereishit. It's all over the Tanakh, and the Tanakh, the word Tahom, never means water table.
Okay, let me move on now. Omar Rabba Lididi Hazili Hai Ridya. Rabba says that I once saw this guy Ridya, this character Ridya. Who's Ridya? Ridya, it looks like Domi Le Igla Ufirsa Sifvate. He looked like a calf, an egel, whose lips were either split or parted or separated. Perhaps it means he was smiling. I once saw Ridya, who was smiling. Who's Ridya? Rashi explains Ridya is the malach in charge of rain, in charge of bringing rain. You can imagine why his name might be Ridya, like Morid Hatal, the rain bringer. V'kaima bein tahoma tatata the tahoma ilo'o. And he was standing between the lower water, the waters of the Tahom, and the upper waters, Le tahoma ilo'o omarle. He says to the upper waters, chashor meimecha, let your waters flow. The tahoma tata amar le abo meimecha. And to the lower waters, he says, let your waters bubble up, which is kind of like what we saw previously. The lower water comes up, the upper water comes down. Shneemar hanitzanim miru ba'aretz. This, of course, is the famous psukim in Perek Bet of Shir Shirim. Kol dodi hine zeba midaleg ben harim mekapetz al hagvaot hanitzanim miru ba'aretz.
Yehudi,
I know what I'm doing. If I skipped it, I did it on purpose. If I have the Tanakh in front of me, I know what I'm doing. There was an ellipsis there. You don't have to read everything. Hanitzanim niru ba'aretz, right? The prachim, the flowers, the blooms appear in the land, right? Eight hazamir higia. Eight hazamir, midrashically, allegorically, is meant to mean the time of singing of the birds. It might mean the time of the pruning of the trees. Lakol hator nishma ba'artzenu, and the sound of the turtle dove is heard in our land. Of course, nitzanim niru ba'aretz doesn't mean flowers according to the allegorical reading. It means tzadikim, that tzadikim come. But the pshat of the pasuk is that the flowers, the buds, are, you know, show up in the spring. And the Gemara seems to understand that this has something to do with the nisuchim, and it becomes a little complicated because one is connected to the spring and the other happens in the fall. But the long and the short of it is that I see, Rabbah says, I see this ridya, this malach of the rain. Eight hazamir, the time for singing, which again is probably not the pshat, but is the way Chazal read the pasuk. And what's the singing? The singing might be the singing of the chag, of Chagas Sukkot, of the halel and everything else that's done at the time of Sukkot. And the fact that he's ashore, right? So in other words, the pasuk, and again, Chazal did everything they could to read the psukim, even a pasuk like this, which is not in any way erotic. But even a pasuk like this, which seems so straightforward, Chazal read through the allegory. So kol hator, a tor is a you know, a yonah. But of course, in Aramaic, a tor is
a shore,
like, you know, like Abu Tor here, the neighborhood near Talpiot, right? Avi Hashor, right? So, in other words, the fact that this malach appears as a shore, as an egel, right? As a bovine, you know, this is all found hidden in the meaning of this pasuk. So, who is this ridya? So, ridya. Again, Rashi says he's the malach for bringing rain. But Rashi had earlier said on Daf Zayin that the name of the malach for bringing rain is called who? What's the name? The more famous name for the
Afri.
Afri. You know, on when we say Tfilat Geshem on Shmini Atzeres, we talk about Afri, right? Afri is the name of the malach. So apparently these are nicknames. Maybe Afbri is his proper name and Ridya is his nickname because that's what he does. He's Morid Hageshem. But there's a different problem because the very first Gemara that we learned together, check your notebooks, go all the way back. Those of you that weren't with us when we started learning, I don't even remember when it is that we started learning Masechet Ta'anit now that we're finishing. Maybe somebody has that written down in your notebook. When was the first year? But on Daf Beis Amud Aleph in Ta'anit, the Gemara opens by discussing the fact that there are no malachim, that rain is one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps to himself. There are certain tasks that he designates to others, but rain is one thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps. He keeps the keys to the rain in his own hands, as it were, metaphorically. Right? So what is this talking about? So there's a parallel Gemara in Masechet Nida on Daf Tet Zayin Amud Beis in Masechet Nida that talks about this Malach Afbri, this rain Malach, who makes it very clear, this Malach is a very low-level Malach. He actually has no ability to do anything on his own. all of the rainmaking decisions and power and et cetera are really in fact in God's hand. But when God, when Hashem decides to give the rain, right, he tasks Afbri with kind of just like, I don't know, pushing it out of the cloud or blowing the clouds around into the right place. Now, I don't know much about Malachim and how they work. It's interesting. I'm in the middle of a sentence, Yudi. I don't know. You know, it's interesting. It's always interesting to me that there are so many people that are really interested in these things. But what is interesting to me is the fact that like the work of Rashi and Tosfot here to square the beginning of the Gemara with this apparently contradictory or contrary tradition of Afbri, and then to read it into this pasuk of Shir HaShirim, but according to the way the pasuk is interpreted, not according to what it says. Yehudi, if you have something to say, I'm happy to hear it, but then I want to make some ground and get to the end of the parak. So now is your chance.
I'm just saying Afbri is very mentioned in the Tanakh and not as a malach. It's simply, you know, but that's not my point really. The real point I'm trying to get across here is the fact that, you know, how would you see Hanitzanin Rubaris to prove anything? You have to go to Hakar, Tarmish, Mabiyar, Senu. All that proves is that there's some force looks like a Torah. Okay? And by the way, the Pshat is very well could mean Zamir. Zamir is a Janus parallelism. Zamir goes upwards and downwards at the same time. And Hanitzanin Rubaris is the upward look, and is the downward look. That's an absolute parade example of Janus parallelism.
Okay, but in other words, I'm gonna ask you to just mitgaber kitzat and just be along for the ride as we finish up the parak here.
Go for it.
Hayu mitanim v'yardu gshamim. What happened? To go back to the earlier discussion, they were fasting and it starts to rain. At what point do you say we don't even need to finish this fast day? Hayumitanim v'yardug shamim. Now, yardug shamim, again, it probably doesn't mean a sprinkle. It probably means the quantity of rain that had already earlier been established lines earlier by the Gemara. But if on the fast day you reach that point, when can you stop fasting? Hayumitanim v'yardug shamim kodem netzachama. This is quoting from the Mishnah from earlier. Remember, all of the Mishnayot were at the beginning of the Perek. You may have forgotten them. You have to go back and review them. So if it started raining before Netzachama, in other words, they declare a fast day. But remember, they would, at Mincha on the afternoon before, they would say, tomorrow we will be fasting. They wake up in the morning before Netzachama. It's even too early to daven. They see that it's been raining overnight. Tanu Rabbanan, hayu mitanin v'yardu lehem gshamim kodem anetzachama lo yashlimu. You don't have to finish the fast, right? The fast is called off at that point. Lachar netzachama yashlimu. But if it starts raining after daybreak, so then you, having declared that day a fast day, you have to finish that fast day, says the Chachamim. Says Rabbi Meir, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kodem chatzot lo yashlimu, lachar chatzot yashlimu. If the rain came before noon, so then you can call it off for the rest of the day. But if it came after noon, so then you should finish fasting until the end of that day. Rabbi Yossi Omer, kodem tet shaot. If it started raining, if it starts raining before the ninth hour, meaning on the Shaot Zmaniot clock, where the sunrise and sunset are, it's a perfect day of 12 hours. So this would be 3 o'clock on the Shaot Zmaniot clock. Shekein matzinu ba'achav melech Yisrael shehitana b'teisha sha'ot v'lamala. Shne'emar ha'ra'ita ki nichna achav v'chulei. This is a posuk in Malachim Aleph Perek 21 about Achav's attempt at tshuva after Kerem Navot. It's a little complicated because this is nowhere in the pshat of the psukim, and it's not even anywhere in the Meforshim. But the Gemara seem to have a tradition. The Meforshim try to explain where the Gemara gets this idea that it was in the ninth hour. It's one of those Gemaras that tries to intuit what was going on that day and when it would have been. But just take my word for it. The Gemara understands that this event in the Pasuk of his fasting was until the ninth hour. So if it rains before the ninth hour, you can call off the fast. If it starts after the ninth hour, really towards the end of the day, then you have to finish. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. So halacha lamaisa, though, halacha lamaisa, we say chatzot, right? We say that if they're fasting and it rains before noon, so then you can call off it, meaning it rains in the prescribed quantity, then you can call it off for the rest of the day. And if not, so then you keep going. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia gazar ta'anita. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia made a fast day. V'yardu lehem gshamim la'achar netzach hama. And it started raining, but after daybreak. Savar la'ash luminhu. He thought we should finish it. We should carry out the rest of the day, even though in the very first, whatever it was, the very first hour of the day, the sufficient quantity of rain came. He thought, having started the fast, you should finish it. Omar le Rabbi Ami, but Rabbi Ami asks him, kodem chatzot, v'achar chatzot sheninu. He says, it's before noon, right? And we said that afternoon, you don't have to finish. Shmuel haKatan gazar ta'anita v'yardu lehem gshamim kodem anetzachem. He declared a fast, and in that case, it started raining even before daybreak. Kisvurin ha'am lomar shivcho shel tziburhu. So the people interpreted this was a good sign. This is a praise of the community. The community gears itself up to fast, and it rains even before the fast. The prayers which have not yet even been said have been answered because it rains before they start their fast. So they take this as a sign of that it's the shivcho shel tzibur. This is the praise of the community. That just the very desire to fast brought about the rain. So Omar Lahem, Shmuel HaKatan says to them, he disagrees. He says, you shouldn't be so proud of yourselves. Emshol lachem mashal, let me tell you a parable. Lama hadavar domeh, to what can this be compared? Le'eved shemivakesh pras mirabo. Amar lahem, Tanulo v'alesh makolo. A servant asks something, some reward or some food from his master, right? And before he can hardly get the request out of his mouth, the master says, "Oh, you just give him whatever he wants." I mean, how often do we do this as a parenting strategy, right? Before the kids even finish fetching, we say, "Give them whatever they want." Right, just so I don't have to listen to them kvetch. The fact that the prayer was answered is not necessarily a sign of your great merits. It might just be HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to listen to you. So Shmuel HaKatan says, take it easy. Don't be so proud of yourselves. Shuv Shmuel HaKatan gazar ta'anita. And in another time he made a fast. V'yardu lehem gshamim la'achar shkiyat hachama. So they fasted the whole day. And after sunset, at the end of the fast, it started to rain. So they say, "Kisvurim ha'am lomar shifcho shel tziburhu." So this time they say, "This really is a prayer. We spent the whole day in davening and fasting, and as soon as the day was over, it started to rain. The prayer was answered. That's a sign of the righteousness of our community." Omar Lahem Shmuel, Lo Shevach Shel Tzibur, not necessarily, don't be so quick. It's not necessarily a praise of the community. Ella em sholachem mashal. I'll give you another parable. Lamada Vardome, Le'eved Shemivakesh Pras Mirabo. Same thing. The servant asks something from his master. Amar Lahem Hamtinu lo ad sheyitmak mekvitzta'er vacharkach tnulo. And the master tells his other servants, give him what he wants, but only after he's a shmata, only after he's suffering away, you know, desiring what he wants, and only when he's at his, you know, at the end, you know, only when he's like, do you remember how you felt, whatever it was 2 weeks ago, you know, like at the end of Tisha B'Av, right? The end of Tisha B'Av isn't like the end of Yom Kippur. The end of Yom Kippur is so uplifting, right? The end of Tisha B'Av, like you feel it, besides the fact that it's a little longer and it's a little hotter, right? And you didn't have the energy from Ne'ilah. The end of Tisha B'Av, you feel like a shmata just wrung out, right? So that's when he said the fact that you were answered only after you spent the whole day fasting, right? Maybe that's a sign. God gave you what you needed, but it wasn't because you're such so righteous. He made you really sweat it out until the end. So wait a second. If the people are answered even before they start their fasting, he says that's not necessarily the praise of the city. And if they're answered only after they've done their day of repentance and fasting and prayer, that's also not in their prayer. So which what? When do we say that a result is an indicator of the righteousness of the community? Omar, Mashiv HaRuach, Unshav Zika. They start saying Mashiv HaRuach in the davening, and the wind starts to blow. That's a sign that this is a righteous community. V'amar Marid HaGeshem, and they start davening that the rain should fall. V'ata Mitra. And it's, you know, that sometimes happens. You know, we start saying Mashiv Ruach Marid HaGeshem, and that very day, you get the first drizzle. That's a sign of a righteous community which has been answered. Ma'aseh Gazru Ta'anit Balud. This is the Gemara. This is the Mishnah at the end of the Perek, but we read it at the beginning of the Perek. The story was, There was a drought. They make a ta'anit in Lod, you know, by the airport. And anybody that traveled this summer, anybody that had to go to Ben Gurion this summer knows what it means to fast because he had to stand on line. When we went to Europe this summer, we were online for 5 hours, right? 5 hours we were online. This was like the day after Shavuos HaBetamuz or something. So we just had a fast day and we had another fast day waiting online in Lod. But after they were answered, they break their fast, they eat and they drink, and then they had Hallel. They recited Hallel in praise and thanksgiving for the prayers being answered. So the Gemara says, V'neima Hallel mi'ikara. Wait a second. Their prayers were answered. The first thing they do is eat and drink. And then they said Hallel. Wouldn't it have been more spiritually proper to first say Hallel to thank God for the redemption and then eat and drink? Abaye v'Rava de Omri Trevaihu, Abaye and Rava, they both said, Lafisha ein omrim Hallel, Ella, go on to the Kavav Amud Aleph, Ella al nefesh svea v'keres mle'a. No. You can't thank God, you can't praise God, you can't sing songs of praise to God unless you have you can't do it on an empty stomach, right? You have to do it on a full stomach, on a satisfied soul, on a full stomach. It's not proper. And by the way, not Hallel, but we know this is a custom which has become a little more widespread. It's not a custom. It's a halacha, which was not very well observed. But in the last number of years, you see this is the case. On Motzei Yom Kippur and on Motzei Tisha B'Av, we recite the Kiddush Levana, which should be recited with a certain amount of joy and happiness as you greet the new moon and you recite the bracha and you sing those songs and you dance around. But it's not proper to recite Kiddush Levana while you're still fasting, because you can't generate the kind of happiness that's required for Kiddush Levana while you're still fasting. So, I don't know, years ago, I think that's what we used to do. After Yom Kippur, you'd say Kiddush Levana, it would be done efficiently and quickly, and then everybody would run home and say Havdalah and break their fast. Same thing on Tisha B'Av. Now you see more and more people are machmir to break the fast on a cookie, on some juice, and whatever it is, go out and say Kiddush Levana. So there's a similar idea here. You can't go straight into Hallel, straight from the fast. So that's why they ate and drank, and then they recited Hallel. But the Gemara says, "Ini? Oh yeah, is that really true? That you can't say Hallel on an empty stomach?" Vaharav Papa ikla leve kenishta de Avi Govir. Rav Papa went to the shul in Avi Govir. Where's Avi Govir? I don't know, somewhere in Bavel. Who has the Steinsaltz?
I have it. I'll look it up.
Where's Avi Govir? So he went to a certain shul, the Gazar Ta'anit, and they were having a fast. The Yardulahem Gshamim, and the rain came, Ad Chatzot, before noon. V'amar Halel, and they recited Halel. And then they did it in the exact reverse order. Right? We said, no, you should first eat and drink and then say Halel, because you shouldn't say Halel on an empty stomach. So why do they do it in that order? Shani b'nei Mechoza, the people of Mechoza, in other words, Avi Govar must be in near Mechoza, in Bavel. So they were different. Why? The Shechichei Bushichus. They liked a good drink. They knew how to toss back a few, so they were afraid that if everybody goes home and breaks the fast, everybody will have a beer, will have a wine, will have whatever they're having, and then they'll never come back to say Hallel afterwards.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but here we're having a Tanit for rain in Bavel. It's not only in Eretz Yisrael.
It's not only in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara earlier had discussed this, the Taniot outside. They're they're slightly different. So Hadran Alach say the Taniot Eila. We finished Mazel Tov. We finished the third Perek. We have just a little bit left. We're on Kavvav Omud. We're on Kavvav Omud at the top of Kavvav Omud Aleph, and we have just until. Daf Lamid Aleph Amud Aleph. So just five more dapim, and we are done with Masechet Ta'anit.
Rekha wrote now?
Yes, please, Yehudi.
Okay, so two Tanachera wrote. Some yes. say that when they say Halal HaGadol, they don't just mean Psalm 136, but they mean 135, 136 is a unit. And I've seen that in many places. And the reason being that in 135 is where you actually get specific references to rain, where it says, Ma'alein Nesiyim Ikseyaretz Brakim La'matar Asa Motzei Ruach Me'otzro Tav. Whereas if you're just going to say it's only 136, the only backing you can come up with is Zoltein Lechem L'chol Basar Fidi Olam Chasto. No real specific terrain. Okay? But many other places think that Halal HaGadol was both Psalms together and not just 136. That's not something specific to here. That's said elsewhere. And the other point I wanted to make, also Tanakh related, which I read it in Steinsaltz, hints at it, but I read it for favor somewhere, is that when they're quoting the Pasuk about Ki Nichna Akal Lefanai, they want something that basically brings Achav to mind. But the real thing they're thinking about is the fact that It was after the mincha, the day that they were all fasting for rain, the day that they had the bow, the whole thing that basically was an issue, who's going to bring the rain. When Hashem actually brings the rain, it's after the mincha. And he always says, "Beferish to Achav, Lech Echol," as if up to that point he hadn't eaten the whole day. So sometimes when a Bavli quotes a pasuk, it doesn't have, in Agadah I'm talking about, it doesn't necessarily have to be the pasuk that proves the point. It's in the neighborhood of something that proves the point. It's right. Just to remind you of what they're thinking about. Like, you know, for example, that's why I was trying to bring in Kinea Stava Baha Geshem Kalaf Halaklo, because I really think that that's what they're thinking about more than what they're actually quoting. I mean, in academic study, this is a well-demonstrated thing, that Pukim, the Bavli quotes, are not necessarily the ones that are the proof text. They're just make you think about what
they're like. They're like placeholders for larger ideas.
Right. Oh, that's good. I didn't think of that word. That's perfect.
Okay, excellent. Well, yashar koach to everyone on completing the third paragraph.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week, next Tuesday.
Thank you very much.
Yashar koach. Thank you.
Bye.